Nice to be back with all of you again. I understand the last several Sundays there's been some topics about qualities of a devotee. Maybe it was just coincidental, but that's been the topic. So I selected one of the qualities of a devotee to speak about. A very popular one these days, actually. Ahimsa. Nonviolence. Nonviolence has weaved its way into Western culture without anybody even noticing it so much. It's very popular. And one of the reasons it's very popular is there's no surrender. There's no necessity of, at least the popular version, of acknowledging God. In fact, the teaching of Buddha, which long ago popularized nonviolence, is explicitly atheistic, which is very interesting. You have a religion that's atheistic. I'll say it again. A religion that's atheistic. Very interesting. And very popular. It may not go under the name of Buddhism, but nonviolence is very popular in a very violent world that we live in. Another very interesting thing about Buddha's teaching is something that's more than interesting, it's very puzzling. He's an incarnation of Krishna. That's teaching atheism. Very interesting. In fact, our pranam mantra, one of our two pranam mantras for Srila Prabhupada, is specifically that Prabhupada is dedicated and committed and very expert at driving away and defeating voidism, shunyavad. That's Buddha's teaching. This teaching of nonviolence, what's the basis and support of it? Zippo. Very strange. Very strange. Where does everything come from in Buddhism? We'll start with what is everything? Everything is nothing. And where does nothing come from? It comes from nothing. Very interesting. So why be nonviolent? It's a principle, it's a religion. It's how you live in this non-existing world in order to get the enlightenment that everything is nothing. You have to at least become non-violent, then you can become nothing. Wow. According to the teaching that Srila Prabhupada presents in Bhagavad Gita, this teaching of voidism springs from frustration. There's a verse in Bhagavad Gita, Vita Raga Bhaya Krodha. Krodha means anger, frustration. Born of frustration, oh, I've had enough. Let me become nothing. It has other names in Western writings. It has a nice name, existentialism. At least that's, I exist. But nothing matters. That's all that matters is that I exist. I don't have any responsibility to anybody. I can do anything. I just exist. Because nothing matters. That's just frustration. So there's different varieties of frustration in the course of history. And an incarnation of Krishna appeared to present one of them. And the crowning teaching is nonviolence. In our St. Louis temple, there for years, 35 years, something like that, some long number of years, there was a restaurant. Now it's shut down temporarily because of manpower situation, and it'll reopen. But for a period of time, when Chaturatma Prabhu, maybe some of you know him, Prabhupada disciple, who was the president, he was very much connected with the vegetarians. He was president of the local vegetarian society and connecting with different yoga organizations and alternative organizations. So he allowed their literature to be placed in the Govinda's restaurant. So I was one day looking at that interesting literature. And one is from a local Buddhist center. And you know how they have flyers or brochures that in a box is what they really want people to look at? So in the box was, nonviolence is the highest religious principle. So be nonviolent. What does that mean? So it's sometimes is taken to be pacifism. In Christian language, it's called turn the other cheek. You heard that expression before? Kirti does heard that expression. Some of you haven't heard that expression. Somebody slaps you. What should you do? Turn the other cheek. Go ahead, slap me here. That's what it means. Pacifism. Don't fight back. Pacifism. That's one idea of what nonviolence means. Ahimsa. There's aggression. Don't be aggressive back. Tolerate, turn the other cheek, be a pacifist. Gandhi's movement had some element of that. Somebody's aggressive, just be peaceful. Nonviolent, non-cooperation. Nonviolence, ahimsa. Just don't cooperate. Sit down, have a strike. It's a regular thing in India these days. You know? I was planning to go... Somebody was planning to go to Mayapur from Calcutta. But they arrived in the morning and they had to wait till 5 o'clock in the evening because there was a once-a-month sit-down strike. It's just people sit in the road so the cars can't move. It's like a protest against something, whatever, you know, there's got to be something to protest against. So every month they have a protest on something. Anyway, without the politics of India, it's pacifism. You can be aggressive, but non-violently aggressive. I'll just give some other examples. There's some of you may know about this, go really modern. And there's a gentleman, Marshall Rosenberg. Heard that gentleman before? He has a big following on nonviolent communication. Seminars, pay lots of money to come here, Marshall Rosenberg, explain how to be nonviolent in your communication and what violent communication is. He's a, you know, intellectual person, and basically he's teaching Buddhism in how to have relationships where your speech is nonviolent. He has little puppets in his hand, and one is wolf speak. And the wolf goes, rawr, 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 rawr. And that's violent. And then there's, I guess, a giraffe, and he's gentle. So, he role plays what's this one like and what's that one like, and teaches how to communicate in a nonviolent way. Communicate messages that are strong, but do it in a nonviolent way, and how to be nonviolent. God disappears from the picture because you don't have to acknowledge God or surrender or serve God. Just be nonviolent. And that's a gateway to nothingness. Or maybe somethingness, maybe the mode of goodness. Because standing alone, ahimsa is at best, it's a principle of goodness. In our Krishna conscious teachings, we also promote principles of goodness. The four regular principles are principles, pillars of goodness. They're not standing on their own, they're not transcendental, but we uphold them. At least our teachings uphold them. And we follow them because they're standards of dharma. And violating them is adharma. So we follow them. But that's not the topmost teaching. Sarvadharmam pridyaja mami kam sharanam braja. That's the teaching. Take shelter of the personality of Godhead. I'll share a little something. One of the modern saints of our time, accepted by many at least, is Dalai Lama. You know, the Mahatma Gandhi of today, the nonviolent exponent of today. So, although that's what he teaches and, you know, stands for, when he explains it, it becomes a little curious. Not so many years ago, there was a demonstration in Washington, D.C., outside of the White House, not that the White House has any decision in the matter, that the land from which Dalai Lama and his people, Tibet, were driven from, they should be given control back, and, you know, the Chinese should get out and should give it back to the Dalai Lama. So he was invited as a guest speaker. So he came, and they put him up in a hotel, and they brought him vegetarian food. He said, take it away, bring veal. And people were assisting him, were shocked, and said, you know, I thought you're vegetarian. He said, oh, we don't do that. You bring me this other. I don't know if the report was true, but I don't know if they'd make it up. Washington Post. In Tibet, maybe there isn't sufficient vegetables or vegetation, and so something else maybe over the course of time became the standard. But when you're in Washington, D.C., and someone brings you... So there's something, even with such an elevated person, something funny about what nonviolence means anymore. One other little just background thing. I shared this the other day. From my experience over the years, just moving about society, wearing a dhoti and shaved head and tilak, curious people, the four types of pious people render service unto me, and one of them is those that are curious. They don't want to commit anything. They're just, oh, what's this all about? And so they ask those kinds of questions. So people will ask, common experience, people will ask, are you part of some religion? Or more commonly today is, are you a Buddhist monk? And my answer is, no, I'm a Krishna monk. Said, oh, what's a Krishna monk? So, explain. And they say, do you mind if I ask you, then, you know, it's like something personal. It's either, how did you get involved in this? Or, do you mind if I ask you, what are the basic things that you believe in? Because religion means you believe in something. Whether you do it or not, you believe in something. That's, you know, like, Prabhupada dismisses, that's not what real religion is. But people ask, what are your beliefs? Or do you believe in reincarnation and things like that? So my experience is they don't hear a word. And the verification is they don't hear a word is how they reply next. Many people reply next, oh, that sounds just like my beliefs. I believe that you should be good to people and you shouldn't hurt anybody and pray to God. That's my belief. It sounds like your belief is the same as my belief. This is very nice. Not what I said, but it's what they hear. or they think they hear or something. And that's a common idea of what it means to be religious. You do good, you don't hurt anybody, and you pray to God. So, it's acceptable to be nonviolent. And so, that becomes a problem when you start reading Bhagavad Gita and it's all about a battle. And Krishna is saying, do it. Maybe some of you know, many of you probably know, that Bhagavad Gita as it is on trial in Russia today. Well, in 2 days. The appeal that's gone to a higher court is that Bhagavad Gita is a extremist literature that should be banned from Russia. Well, that got a lot of opposition from all over the world, especially from India and ministers from UK, and so the lower court and, you know, scholars, the lower court rejected that petition to the court. But the people that made the initial petition have appealed to a higher court. And on the 20th, the hearing is going to be held and probably a decision. That's in 2 days from now. This appeal court is saying, we're not against the Bhagavad Gita, we're against Bhagavad Gita as it is. Because there are things there that are explicit that are provoking people to be violent. The comments are excluding some other people, groups of people, creating groupism, and then this message of violence. So it should be banned. Or at least those passages should be eliminated from the publication that we don't ban. It's serious. As the Bhakti Vigyan Maharaj, who is the GBC in Russia, one of the primary, the Russian devotee, he's a PhD, he's a brilliant man. And his statement is, if this prevails, we're going to have to rewrite what the Hare Krishna movement in Russia means if they win, if we lose. It doesn't mean we're finished, but our book is finished and our reputation is finished, or we have to rewrite what it means. So just this past week, 20 put their neck on the line scholars from throughout Russia wrote to the prime minister and the president, you know who those two guys are, and said, you should take charge of this because we're saying, all 20 of us together, this is not extremist literature, and these are religious statements that you'll find in any religious text, and so on and so on. And, you know, we're saying, we're putting our reputation on the line. We're asking you to take charge of this. It's going to destroy our standing in the whole world if this prevails. I don't know what those two are going to do. They probably would like to see the Hare Krishna movement eliminated and lots of other things eliminated from Russia. It's not, you know, in their grip. When I was becoming involved in Krishna consciousness, it was a big issue. It was during the time Prabhupada started the Hare Krishna movement at the time of the Vietnamese War. And you maybe know from something, some media, books or videos or something, there was a big resistance to the Vietnamese War. Big, 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 big. So I was part of that youth culture, taking part in Krishna consciousness and reading about a war. I can tell you it was some struggle for me at the very beginning. And then I thought, anyway. Prabhupada then wrote Bhagavad Gita, his commentary on Bhagavad Gita, knowing those circumstances, knowing his audience. An excellent speaker speaks to his audience. And I want to read two things that Prabhupada expresses about nonviolence directly in Bhagavad Gita. One is from chapter 10, Bhagavad Gita, text number 4, where, well, it's 4 and 5, Krishna is saying that he's the source of everything, and he's identifying a number of things that he's the source of. And one of them is ahimsa, nonviolence. I hope I can find it easily. Here we go. Ahimsa, nonviolence, means that one should not do anything which will put others into misery or confusion. Material activities that are promised by so many politicians, sociologists, philanthropists, etc., do not produce very good results because the politicians and philanthropists have no transcendental vision. They do not know what is actually beneficial for human society. Ahimsa means that people should be trained in such a way that the full utilization of the human body can be achieved. The human body is meant for spiritual realization, so any movement or any commissions which do not further that end commit violence on the human body. That which furthers spiritual happiness of the people, spiritual happiness of the people in general, is called nonviolence. The way that Prabhupada explained this on some occasions was a visual example. Supposing there's a medical doctor and he's finished his day at work and he's walking along the street with a little black bag of medical equipment, and he sees somebody on the sidewalk writhing in pain, and he just walks right by and doesn't, he has the skill, he has the ingredients, and he doesn't do anything. It's violence. Now maybe he's thinking, I'm off duty, I'm not insured, and if there's any malpractice suit, I'm finished, so I'm not going to do anything because I'm living in America and I can get lose everything in the lawsuit. Not insured. Going to do nothing. That's another violence. Our American legal system. It's legal violence. It's another story. But the Prabhupada would give that example. When you can do something that can relieve another of suffering and you don't, that's violence. Or the converse is, nonviolence is when you assist a human being, a soul and a human body, to achieve the purpose for which the human body was awarded. Self-realization, God-realization. That's nonviolence. Then he's saying explicitly here, when that's missing, that's violence. Well, however nice the name is and the goals are, without that element, it's violence. Nonviolence must include this. The well-being of the soul, or specifically here, the acting with the human body, acting upon the human body in such a way, the purpose for which the human body was awarded is furthered. So that's an ideal. And pause and think a moment. How much do I, Vishnu Das, or Radha Dasi, or you know, male or female, how much do I live my life by that principle? Because it's a Vaishnava principle. Nonviolence. Not just I don't hurt people, but the acts that I do have that, at least the contemplation behind it. I don't know if we get it, you know, if we did a 0 to 10, what the score would be, how often that is. But it's a characteristic as a quality of a devotee. I'm going to read something a little bit further in Bhagavad Gita in chapter 13. Then this is in verses 8 through 12, where Krishna is answering Arjuna's question, what is knowledge? And then the object of knowledge.